Blog Talk Radio.
That sets the tone, everybody. You're listening to This Week in Health Innovation, HIMSS 13 Countdown Edition. I am your co-host, Greg Masters, and joining me in the broadcast booth is Dr. Pat Salber. This is our fourth broadcast in the series. Good morning, Pat. Okay. I assume that I now have stopped our background music. Yes, good morning, Pat. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we are very good. So we are waiting for our guest today. We are going to have a chance to speak with Dr. Rob Lamberts. Dr. Rob Lamberts is a family physician who recently made a transition from a medical group practice where he was intimately involved in both early adoption of electronic health records for the practice, very deep in how tech can improve the workflows, and he embraced it as an early doctor. He's had somewhat of a shift in his experience and attitude towards electronic health records, and he posted a blog. He put up a blog post on this on the healthcare blog called "Death of an Evangelist." And if you haven't read it, I encourage you to go to our blog, hipsy.tv, and
Hello.
Read about it there. Rob?
Yeah, that's me.
Welcome. Well,
thank you.
Glad you're here with Greg Masters and Dr. Pat Salber.
Hi, Rob.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello, Pat. Thank you.
And I was just giving a little bit of an introduction about you being an early adopter in the EHR space, and that you have recently published an article on the on your blog, as
mm-hmm.
well as the healthcare blog, called "Death of an Evangelist," and that we thought we'd talk to you a little bit further about why you wrote the blog post and what was behind it. So without further ado, everyone, let's hear from Rob and Pat. By all means, chime in as usual.
Well, all of this, it actually, that post came up as kind of a prequel to actually the post that I put up last night, which I call For the Record on my blog, and then they renamed it "I'm a Geek" on the healthcare blog because that was one of the first lines that I do, and so you know, basically it was a prequel to this idea of what I've been in my practice, my new practice, which is a direct care practice. I no longer have to use the electronic medical record the way that I once used it, and what surprised me in all of this was just how ill-suited the typical electronic health record is to what I'm trying to do, which is pretty much all patient care orientation, not oriented towards the documentation so that I can get paid or meaningful use. I can't qualify for that because I had to opt out of Medicare in the process. So I've been pondering the question of, and I honestly figured I was such a geek when it comes to electronic health records that I'd be able to figure stuff out. I've been customizing them for a long time. But it was way harder than I expected. It was a very difficult task. I did a different EHR than I had done in my previous practice because I was dissatisfied with the direction they were going, the other electronic record. And so I went to one of the big name ones, and I had 4 days of training just to show me how to use the medical record, which should have should have given me warning signs right off the bat. I mean, if I need 4 days to understand how to make notes and to take care of patients, then, and I'm well acquainted with that, then that's a scary thing. So the question then was, okay, so what's wrong with it? And that's where I went with this post of Death of an Evangelist, is really my belief in the electronic health record as it is now, as it is, had become, it's died. I've really gotten to the point that I think electronic records are ill-suited to patient care because they're documentation tools, and they're not, and they excel at creating documents, but they have more and more, with meaningful use and all the rest, have really gone away from the direction of making the job easier for the clinician, of communication, of all those types of things. And basically, I told my story in this post, The Death of an Evangelist, of saying, you know, I was as enthusiastic of a person as possible. It really can't be understated how big of a change this is for me to be critical towards the whole idea of electronic health records. Because, you know, I was friends with the chairman of, I'm friends with Mark Levitt, the guy who was the head of CCHIT, when it first got going, and I have a lot of friends in high places at HIMSS and such. I've been as much of a, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid kind of doc when it comes to EHR as anybody. I gave talks around the country about EHR adoption and such. But I just feel like it's gone a different direction. It's gone away from what I wanted it to be, which was a patient care tool. And it's become data collection tool, and not where it's easy to turn around the data and use it as the clinician. It's aimed towards those looking over shoulders of clinicians, the data collectors and such. So, you know, it's a tale my eyes were opened coming out of the practice of medicine in the healthcare payment system, the current payment system, because I no longer needed that. It was no longer an assumption that I had to do E&M coding and that I had to avoid Medicare fraud with my all the stuff that I was doing, because now I'm opted out and I don't have to worry about that as much. So anyway, that's the basic story of it. And today's post, actually, I talk about what I think needs to be central to electronic health records rather than documentation, and that is communication. That's the thumbnail.
Rob, this is Pat. My question to you is, I've heard exactly what you've said from other clinicians, that really particularly the big box solutions are solutions that were aimed at being sure that you optimized your coding for billing as opposed mm-hmm. to supporting patient care. But in your experience, are there any EHRs out there that are trying to do what I think you're hoping they will do for you, which is to support your efforts at patient care?
I don't know, and honestly, it's hard for me to. I don't know, because the truth is, if you look at what, there's a business model that has to work for the average clinician. Now, I have to say, I'm not part of a big healthcare system. I've never been a part of a big healthcare system like, you know, a hospital ACO type of complex that would, you know, a hospital system that would employ a bunch of clinicians and everybody is on the same system. That's a whole different beast, and so their needs are going to be run in a different their needs are going to come from a different perspective. But from the independent clinician like myself in the past and now, but in the past, and the independent clinician needs to do E&M coding well, and the system, you know, one of the problems in any business is that, and that's what all of these things are, is they're all the practices are businesses. They have to run, they have to be profitable first before they can achieve their mission. Because if you can't pay your employees, then you can't see patients. And even though seeing patients is more important than making profits, it's not the first thing that has to happen. So any system that doesn't assure profitability for a practice is going to be hurt. And I will say that a lot of the things that I long for, which are the ability to communicate with my patient outside the office, they make absolutely no money for the clinician who is paid by is paid for encounters. The encounter-based system that looks at this, I was giving free care and giving away my time for free if I was spending extra time with patients or communicating with people while they're outside of the office. Now, that's my business model. It's better to do it that way because I want to keep them well and I want to do this continuum of care. So that's a long way to say there may be some that do that, but it's not their primary purpose. Their primary purpose is because if they're selling physicians here, you're going to have this, you're going to give great patient care, but you're going to make lots less money. It's going to be a hard sell. And as good-minded as I think the vast majority of physicians are, there's the harsh reality, especially in primary care, that our margins are very, very tight in the traditional model. The overhead's very high, and you just can't afford to decrease your patient volume by spending your time giving free advice to people over the phone or on the internet. Now, for me, it's not free because they've already paid. And actually, I have to convince patients of that. It's kind of funny. So, I don't think there is a model that's centered around communication that's centered around that. If I would do patient quality of care stuff, but it wasn't because it was paid for, it was just because it was, if I got more efficient at doing the other parts, it would free me up time and I would be able to be profitable. And as an add-on, I could actually even give better care. But it was never the central focus of what I was doing.
So, Rob, this is Greg. I wanted to – Pat, I'd love if you would take the lead with Rob here because it's pretty granular and right in your backyard. But I want to just put this out there because – to me, the conversation is important for three reasons and why Rob is so prime here. One is he's a primary care physician. B, came out of a group practice situation with an emphasis and a willingness to embrace electronic health records, who's now making the transition to a direct practice model. So if you take those three threads, Rob's experience with this continuum from EHRs transitioning to the direct practice world, it's an incredible perspective because 3 years ago at HIMSS in Orlando, I was at a dinner table with a major player from a large EHR company, and he was hearing from a CMIO of a small hospital back east, and the CMIO was telling him, "Your program is killing our hospital." And the response that he got back was, "Well, that's not our problem." So if anything, in light of what I'm hearing from you today, Rob, I'm saying, oh, my God, nothing's changed. In fact, it may have gotten worse, user groups notwithstanding.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, let me emphasize that we were successful. It wasn't like I was an EHR user who didn't get it, who didn't figure it out. In fact, you know, one of the stories I tell was just of how I got it way before everybody else got it, that is data management and the real powerful tool of using data. I went to my vendor and said, "Look, guys, I see what I just had this. My eyes were open to what healthcare could be is if we really utilize the information in a way that was as powerful as it could be." I said, "Look, I'm a small practice. I don't have the money and resources to put into that. But if you, then as vendor, I said, if you gave me the resources to really use this product 100%, I think, it was a moment where you could really show off just how powerful it could be. It was an order of magnitude better. I just saw clearly what care could be." And they didn't get it. They just saw it as a powerful documentation tool rather than the ability to use the data for the sake of the patient. It was still the doctor's record that they were looking at, and I was just floored that they didn't see it. Because I really believed in these people. I really did at that point in time. I was, very enthusiastic, and I gave talks for them, and I gave talks for hymns and all the other types of things. But they just didn't get it. And so I went out to kind of prove it on my own. And we were able to be in the top 10% of income for primary care and offer very good care. Whenever we showed our numbers, they were always very impressive, Pneumovax rates of 90%, the types of things that everybody would kind of go, whoa. And whenever we concentrated on something, we could accomplish it. But, it just became more and more difficult. Oddly, it was the advent of things like meaningful use and patient-centered medical home that took the focus away from our ability to do that, because we ended up spending more and more time trying to generate summaries and all the other kind of stuff. It's like it was just anti-patient care, and that's when I finally ended up stepping out and saying, I've really got to be about patient care. It wasn't that I wasn't making enough money. It was that I was going home each day feeling like I could not give as good of care and there was as I wanted to. And in the past, I always kind of felt like all I had to do was lean a little bit harder on the EMR and I could get more out of it. And I did. I mean, it really felt like it freed me up to take better care of my patients. But it's become more and more burdensome. And stepping out of it just made me realize, gosh, I really was just totally burdened, because now I'm not, and it's just a totally different perspective.
So, Rob, this is Pat. Could you give us, if you were able to design your own EHR to support your current practice model, what are two or three things that you would design into such a system that you don't have in the existing systems?
Well, again, you led into today's post, which talks about, to me, it is really a communication over documentation. Instead of a tool to document my communication with patients, I want a tool that enables my communication with patients, a tool that makes communication easier, whether it's via whatever service that I want to use, whether it's email or even, the conversation. The problem is that you spend so much time documenting that most patients would say that the doctor is so caught up looking at the EMR or they're so busy doing all the other stuff that they're not listening. I want a tool that gives me the ability to listen better. And again, that's one thing that IT does real well, communication. I can do FaceTime with my daughter up in New York and see and talk to her, whereas in the past I couldn't, or Skype, whatever. I'm going to do a Skype visit with a patient tomorrow, actually, in this practice here. Technology is an enabling thing when it comes to communication, but really it's not, we get so fixated on getting the documentation and the data in, but it's really the healthcare is really the transfer of the communication of information. It's not the information itself. It's the communication of the patient telling me their problems. And so really, again, something that enables me to communicate, whether it's via whatever tools, that there's some products out there very similar to Google Wave now that are coming out soon that I've been able to beta test that are really nice communication tools, and my patients are really excited. And they're carrying around a smartphone all the time, most of them are, and or even just they can be near one, or a lot of them have iPads. They could communicate with me very easily with those tools if it was put in their hands. The second thing is the ability to organize information, and I've very much been frustrated with EMRs this way, because I really do believe there is this, why in the world has an EMR never had a timeline? Why? And I mentioned that in today's post as well, this idea of having a timeline of symptoms that said at this point in time you were having these symptoms, or a tag cloud of symptoms that the person has had, and you see, wait a minute, you know, that word cough is really huge. Every time they come in or every time we converse, we have this type of thing. I mean, technology does this already. I'm not talking about any technology that's not there. But then have a timeline and say, when you started this medicine, this is your cholesterol results. When you stopped and when you started this medicine, this was. Nobody is looking at this graphical view of the data that would give you so much more information. I need something that allows me to not only see it, but to communicate it to my patients so that they understand as well. You know, that those are the two big things for me is in terms of what I need from an EMR tool. But, I mean, I think lastly is this idea of simplicity, of something that is, you know, I've been sharing Google spreadsheets now with my patients, and the first one to do it was an elderly guy whose wife had just gotten out of the hospital with congestive heart failure, and he was already doing a spreadsheet, which that's what encouraged me to go ahead and look further. But he was already to see if I could get him doing it. I put him on a Google spreadsheet, and now he's filling that out, and we're following her weight on a daily basis. I mean, we can keep her out of the hospital. We can save them a ton of money, much less make her live longer just by – and it takes me all of a, you know, 20 seconds a day to monitor that type of thing. Those are the type of tools that are just so powerful, and they're already present on the web. They're already available, but they're – you know, what I'm finding is I have to go like five different places – to get them. I need something that's simple for my patients. You know, what I really want is an app on, you know, the computer or on the smart device that they can push. It's just the Dr. Rob app. They click it and it opens it up, says, what are my meds? You know, or what was my last study? Or I need to talk to Dr. Rob, or I need a refill on this medicine. Just simple things that's all stuff that you would expect out of apps anyway, but is meant towards people that are, you know, that are going to, it just lets them use it better. It's centered around the needs of the patient. Actually, one other thing that I, you know, and this is where I kind of, a lot of folks kind of think I'm crazy, but they've always felt that way anyway. So I believe very strongly in the collaborative health record. The idea that data ownership is an idea that we should just get rid of. We believe that somehow I own my data here in the office. And the idea that there's my health record here and I invite patients to see into the patient portal, which is a view into my records, and then I share my records with the cardiologist or stuff. It's like, why not just kind of have a patient record that we all work on and that we all work on together and that we all contribute to for the sake of the care of the patient. And it's kind of a PHR, but it's instead of me rewriting it, I just view their social history from the personal health record, and the patient has the ability to update that. And the way that I'm going to update mine is by saying, hey, you know, any changes? Have you stopped smoking? Have you lost your job? Or that kind of stuff. Well, just let the patient do it right there. Let it be something that they actually take part in. And so, I mean, those are all things that are available right now. It's not something that is pie in the sky. It's actually simple things that the Internet could do.
So I just happened to peek over at the healthcare blog because I didn't see your blog post. I am a geek, and I want to point out to you that since we tweeted out your idea of a tag cloud, we've gotten a couple of pings on Twitter to check out some apps. Earlier today, Haptique went to the web announcing that they will be that they now have a certification program that's available for download on their site today, Haptique. And Matt Holt did a blog piece on Haptique titled Certifying Apps, Haptique's New Big Idea. So, you know, I think there are people who are actually listening, and this is, and so what do you think of this idea of certifying applications?
Certified by whom?
Haptik.
Okay. I actually don't know. I mean, again, certification comes down to, I mean, I don't know. I'm first off, I'm skeptical of that. I do think that there is a certain amount of which there needs to be standards in this, and it has to be something that is, you know, that can reassure doctors and reassure patients that this is something that is certified. I think that it meets certain standards. I agree with that concept. I'm always skeptical because it was, you know, meaningful use certification and CCHIT certification that I think started to cause stuff to go downhill in the EMR realm. It was the minute you started, because it was not the patient and the doctors who were the ones who were saying whether something was really useful. And when something is designed by an engineer or designed by a hospital administrator, it usually doesn't favor the clinician doing things from the exam room. And that's really what I care about. On the other hand, I think you don't want it to be the Wild West where you've got a gazillion different things out there. You do want some standards. So I think it's important to have standards, and somebody's going to have to do that. But, you know, I think I wouldn't make a blanket statement saying that, you know, standards are good things or bad things, or certification is good or bad. A lot of it just depends on who's doing it and what their agenda is. Is their agenda truly enabling patient care and safety and all the rest of the stuff, or is it somehow tied to the billing system, which is what I think was the death of meaningful use, or at least not the death of it, because I think there is still some hope. I'm not totally against it. I just am saying from the outside that, you know, my hope is that doing this will rattle cages and make people say, look, if he is doing this, then it's really got to be something that folks pay attention to. I mean, I don't know.
So, Rob, this is Pat. As I listen to you talk and throw out these fantastic ideas like the tag cloud, it seems to me that what's been missing from a lot of the development, and of course I wasn't involved in the development of any of these EHRs, that there hasn't been a true kind of co-design or co-development that engaged physicians and patients and families in the design of either these EHRs or even many of the apps. And
yeah.
It's something that I'm really interested in. But my question to you is, to do co-design means that docs and patients have to take the time to participate. And my question to you is, do you think they will? Or they would if they were given the opportunity?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, let me just give a quick example that we just kind of brainstorm. I was talking to, in my practice, I had a mom come in and the question was, okay, so how am I going to do well baby care? Because I do pediatrics as well as internal medicine. And so how would I do well baby care differently in this type of a practice? And it occurred to me that wouldn't it be cool to set up a spreadsheet with all the developmental milestones and other types of things and have mom fill them out while they came up, you know, and that way it was something that I would be alerted to when, oh, baby walked today. Okay. And then I wouldn't have to go through the whole thing. And then in discussion on Twitter with some other folks, and I was like, you know, what really be cool would be having an app on your phone that you could take a picture of your baby walking. And, you know, people will become involved if they get something out of it. They won't become involved, you know, if you say, would you like to co-develop an app? Most people will say, that doesn't sound all that interesting. But I hear music. Is that?
Well, Rob, we're going to wind down the live portion of the broadcast.
Okay.
We'll cut off at
11:30
Eastern. But if you can stick around, we can go over and chat a little bit more in overtime. And I have a question I want to ask you about ACOs. Okay.
Sounds good.
Let's going to be the near last word for the live portion of the broadcast segment. I want to thank Dr. Rob for his time today, and we will continue talking in after hours, so please join us on This Week in Health Innovation.
Nice music.
Now Adam took a bite out of the apples one day, and the juice came running out.
And we're back.
Okay.
So, Rob, please continue.
That was quite the teaser, I got to say.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, the idea was
to find suitable music.
Wouldn't it have been in honor of New Orleans, right? I like the music.
So, Rob, this is Pat. I have to say that your last idea about being able to take the photograph of the child walking and send it to the doc for inclusion in the record. I think it's fun and it's valuable.
And if you could get pediatricians in on this easily, because we love to engage patients. And so if you had, I mean, there is actually an app that does that kind of thing. It's a memory thing. But what if it was co-developed with pediatricians and you allowed pediatricians to get that information kind of underneath this was this idea of monitoring kids and their development over time and the ability to pick up stuff before, earlier. You would pick up developmental problems earlier because there's clearly a benefit of doing that versus, so the idea blossoms into something. And I believe that things like this happen not because there's a good sales pitch. It's because there's a need and it's a well-presented idea, but that both, I think you're going to get doctors and patients in on it when doctors and patients find it valuable. And I think you could get pediatricians and other docs, and parents loving this idea because it allows people to capture their interest and then they also at the same time have this back end where the pediatricians will push this app. I mean, again, my wife was like, don't talk about it. Patent the idea.
How much more fun to produce this visual record of your child's development compared to what most PHRs ask, which is you sit down and you type all this stuff in, and nobody ever finishes it. It's like as a mother who kept a baby book, no baby book ever goes past about 4 years old, right? Because you run out of steam. But we're all taking pictures with our cell phones all the time. That's just a part of the way we live life now.
Yeah, and so make this something that is in cooperation, make it Facebook compatible. It's kind of an Instagram, but it's a Insta Healthgram or whatever. I don't know. It's a stupid name, but that's the point. The point is that I think we have been thinking inside the box far too much, and I do think that it's because we're bogged down with the payment system. But even in this circumstance, if you got pediatricians and there are some mom pediatricians who actually I've been talking to some on the development of this idea of an app or whatever. I think there's a lot of folks who really could run with this type of idea and do something. But, there's a lot of execution. A good idea, as I can very much tell you with my practice, a good idea is it still takes a ton of work, and it still can fail even if it's a brilliant idea. It takes a lot of planning and a good execution, and that's the hard part about starting a new practice like I'm doing. And it's made even harder by the fact that I still don't have a good landing solution as far as an electronic medical record. And I have folks contact me and, well, why don't you look at mine? I don't really have time to do that at this point in time. I'm now seeing patients, and so I'm going to have to, as the saying goes, have to, rebuild the airplane while I'm flying it and not crash in the process. And it's kind of where I'm at. I do have some way more opportunity to help in the, you know, to fix it up in this practice, because I'm not nearly as busy as I was, but I'm getting busy quick, and I'm getting a lot of records that I don't quite know what to do with, and storing them in a lot of different places. And honestly, the thing that really occurred to me was that the company, and this is kind of my last line in the today's post, the company that does it all is Google. And if somehow I could entice them into seeing my vision as something that's, you know, organizing the world's information, well, that's one thing that they do, and don't be evil. Well, you know, fixing the healthcare system might be a pretty good thing that they might be able to get behind. But, you know, they really have a lot of solutions that could be the back end to this type of a thing. I don't think they could make it themselves. That was the problem with Google Health, is it has to be something that is engaged between doctors and patients. And again, PHRs, I think, are innately flawed because they don't have physician buy-in. But if it's a collaborative record, if I benefit from my patients putting stuff in there, then I'm going to encourage it to happen.
Yeah, well, it seems like a kernel of a magnificent idea here. I think you should take your wife's advice, patent it, and find some partners and make it happen.
So we're playing a little Russian roulette here. We never quite know when the servers are going to slam shut in the after-hours slot. So, Pat, do you have any final questions you want to ask Rob before I pose the ACO question?
No, I just want to thank you, Rob, for a wonderful discussion and for sharing all those good ideas with us.
My pleasure. And if any of your listeners somehow makes a gazillion dollars off of that, I hope you at least give me credit.
We'll call it the Dr. Rob app.
So Dr. Rob is multi-talented, and he's a primary care physician, you know, embracing EHRs and migrating to direct practice. But he's now viewing the keynote at HIMSS on Sunday titled Landscape of Quality and Cost in Today's Healthcare Industry, which is admittedly a track focusing on ACOs, medical homes, and the like. So, Rob, how does a doc who's now moving in the direct practice space become a keynoter on essentially an ACO track?
Well, they're going to be moving some furniture into my office, so mind the background noise. What happened was actually I actually pitched my model to some friends that I've got at HIMSS through my strong bent towards EHRs. I've gotten to know a lot of the folks at HIMSS, and our practice did win the Davies Award. I was talking to them, and they said, oh, we need you to give a talk on this. And so I was going to go ahead but when I found out that they actually wanted me to talk at the ACO thing, I thought it was a joke at first. It was like, but the reality was that there is a lot that ties in what I'm doing with the idea of medical home and of continuity of care. And the difference is that as opposed to wanting to know when patients are out of the hospital and wanting to know how to handle the drugs and such, with a program or with a nurse coordinator or a social worker, I'm doing it by house call, and I'm doing it, and I'm growing all this stuff in an organic way based out of need. You know, I've thought about, as my practice grows, of adding a psychologist to my practice, or adding a pharmacist to my practice, or adding a dietitian. And what I'm really doing in this circumstance is essentially the same thing that an ACO is trying to do, which is looking at the overall longitudinal care of a patient and addressing those needs, because I know that they're far more than just a doctor can meet, and other people can actually do it better, and that's where I am. That's kind of where I've been heading, and so that's really going to be the gist of my talk. Is that, you know, in some ways I am their competition, in some ways, but in a very small way. But it's not something that is a bad thing from my standpoint. There is a real tie-in in this. So it's been kind of fun to do, and I'll be interested to see their response.
Absolutely, and you and I did talk a little bit offline about some of the work going on at Q-Liance and how Q-Liance is actually positioning a medical home outside the general definition of what a Medicare shared savings program, ACO, would look like, but gets down more granularly to the principles that you just laid out. So that is going to have to be the last word on our show today with Dr. Rob Lamperts. I want to call your attention to Rob can be followed on Twitter at @doc_Rob, R-O-B. He publishes the blog distractible-distractible.org. And
Musings of a Distractible Mind.
Yeah, Musings of a Distractible Mind, Thoughts of an Odd but Not Harmful Primary Care Physician, which is, I just absolutely love that. I love what you do, Rob, your commitment to the social media space. You, to some degree, sort of memorializing your journey through the adoption of these technologies is incredible community service. So please continue doing what you do. I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat today. Thank you so much, Dr. Pat Salber, for co-hosting the session today, and we are going to call it for a close, and we look forward to seeing you at HIMSS. And if you're in New Orleans, check out the session on Sunday, which Dr. Rob Lamperts is going to be keynoting, and it is titled, where are we, The Landscape of Quality and Cost in Today's Healthcare Industry. That's going to be it for today. This is Greg Masters saying thank you all, and see you in New Orleans. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me.
near my face. I ate up the apple.